This week, the Clarets are away at Manchester City with the specific aim to not lose 5-0. This is the None and Ever podcast. Hello and welcome to another Groundhog Day edition of the None and Ever podcast. Now, I'm not going to be your host this week because I'm otherwise engaged. So instead, we handed over the reins to George and to Richard, who sat down to have a bit of a chinwag and figure out what on earth went wrong again at the weekend. Do enjoy.
Oh, wow, we're live. We've had such a nightmare there trying to get our podcasting platform to work. Yeah, we're the students here, but we're trying to play the teachers, aren't we? We are deep in the Etihad. We're at Man City away. Just to set the scene, it's now 7:32 and we should have started recording at 7. So that's how far behind schedule we are.
Yeah, the missus isn't going to be too happy when I get home an hour late. I'm sick of you doing these Burnley podcasts. You do enough of watching them. Yeah, sorry. I am that sad.
You cause enough misery watching them lose, never mind talking about it.
Yeah, I know. Kind of, she's like, she says to me, like, I understand why you do a podcast when you win, but what do you want to get talking about? You lose, you lost 5-0. What can you possibly do a podcast for an hour for? Oh, you don't know the half of it.
Yeah. Have you never heard of VAR?
Oh,
could talk about that for
to be honest. I'm not going way off topic here, and she doesn't listen to it anyway, but like, she said to me when we actually met, I didn't mind football too much, but she said, you're so obsessive and annoying about it and it affects your mood so much, I actually hate football. She said, the perfect result for me is a draw, because when you lose, you sulk, and when you win, you're too happy. Oh, nice one.
My flatmate's the same. You get too fed up a bit sometimes. But how are you doing, Richard?
Yeah, I'm very good, George. I'm very good. I think both of us have kind of had a bit of a bout of the old COVID. So I got it a few weeks ago. So yeah, kind of self-isolating myself. But yeah, kind of back in school at the moment. It's quite hectic and everything like that. But yeah, doing pretty well. Even though we lost on Saturday, at least I celebrated a Clarets win recently. But yeah, and yourself, George?
Yeah, not too bad. Like, I think we were saying in our group chat, I think there's maybe four of the None and Ever teams had COVID recently. Seems we're getting picked off one by one. So maybe Rovers are in charge of the disease at this point, because we're getting taken down. But luckily, I've got over it now. And yeah, it's not too bad. Just got a bit of a cough remaining, but apparently that can take a while to go. So if I cough during the episode, I've got an excuse. But I should be back up north soon. I had my first student test this morning. Tested negative, so fingers crossed on Saturday that one comes out negative as well, and I can get back home into tier 3. How exciting is that?
Yeah, so you're in Bath at the moment, George. Is that in tier 2?
Yeah, we've come into tier 2 today. I mean, not that it really affects much. It's just, tier 2 today. I think you can have a substantial meal at the pub, but yeah, I don't fancy going and buying a carvery just to get one pint, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. But up here, yeah, like you said, pubs. I thought that video was absolutely brilliant of the old fella on his mobile wheelchair. Did you see it, George, on the ITV?
I know exactly what you're on about.
Yeah. Is this your happy place? No, I'm bloody miserable. What do you expect? Pubs are shut.
Pubs are shut.
Yeah, that's me on a weekend after teaching teenagers 5 days a week.
Hang on, I've got the video here. I'm going to play it on the podcast. Oh. I hope we don't get copyrighted for this.
Yeah, I know. We'll get ITV on the. We'll get ITV to produce a mat. Oh, it's been my favourite video of the year. That it just some. I think Jordan North and that old fella just sum up Burnley perfectly, don't they?
Yeah, they've got like
just full of absolute characters.
The personalities just bob on for the people from around Burnley and the Lancashire area. I've got the video here.
Excuse me, sir. Sorry to bother you. Can we just ask you how happy you're feeling right now?
I'm bloody miserable, actually. Pubs are killed. What do you expect?
He doesn't have a clue what to say either in response.
No, I just love the way he just
and then he wheels off.
Yeah, just from the reporter. I've got stuff to do, but I think that fella or that outstanding gentleman's mood kind of epitomise what everybody was feeling after about 5 minutes at the Etihad, didn't it, George, knowing we was in for another absolute drumming?
Yeah. I've quickly grown to hate that place. I've been to, the last three times we've lost 5-0, I think I've been to all three of them. And then in the Cup, we've definitely lost a drubbing as well. Not quite a 5-0, but we've got drubbed in the Cup a couple of times as well. Whenever that fixture comes up, I mean, I didn't even want to watch on Saturday. I was drawn into it just by the necessity to watch. But, God, it was awful, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, even like the, go back to that in a minute. Even the home game at Turf Moor, did we concede 5? Or was it 4 when Drinkwater played and then we never seen him again around a similar time to year to this, wasn't it? It was a cold midweek night in December.
We went 5 in the midfield because that's why Drinkwater played. But I think the game just totally bypassed him.
I think there's many games that's bypassed him recently, haven't there? But yeah, like you said, it was kind of, you feel out of a necessity to watch the game. And I think this is my problem. Even though I fully expected us to lose, I still had that tiny little bit of hope that thinks, well, you never know, City's not playing quite as well. And then obviously concede that first goal so early, which was avoidable. And then from there, they settle down, they relax into the game. And you can criticise the defending, and rightly so, but when they get the bit between the teeth, the way they move the ball, it's so fast. And even when you win the ball back, they win it back so quickly, and it feels like they just suffocate you more than any other team when they're on top. And yeah, we just couldn't get any foothold in the game. And I seen a start, I think they only had six shots on target, and they scored 5 of them. So they were actually like really clinical as well. But yeah, it was just kind of a 1-0 down after so long. You just knew it's game over.
Yeah, 6 shots on target, and they scored 5 of them.
I might be that's wrong. I'm sure I've seen that somewhere. I've not checked before it, by the way. Yeah. I'm not as kind of, I don't do my research that much for the podcast, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right.
Yeah, I've just checked it on BBC. I mean, as soon as the goal went in on 6 minutes, I mean, I just tweeted, here we go. And I think everyone else felt the same. As soon as that went in, you just knew it happens every time. The floodgates open then. I'm going to take a bit of credit here, because before the game started, I put a little story on Instagram, and I pointed out that I was back from my bike ride in time for Manchester City 5, Burnley 0. And that was before kickoff.
There you go. Mystic George.
Yeah. If I just predict a few Burnley wins, maybe we'd start doing a bit better. But after that first opener, obviously it just seemed like the floodgates opened a bit. We held out for another 14 or 15 minutes or so, but then I think, was it Kyle Walker that scored the second?
No, it was Mahrez scored the second again. It was from that throw-in. We just switched off a little bit and cut inside, I think, Taylor and me, and then slotted it in past Paul Bailey. And then I think Mendy scored the third, if that maybe a defender, if you're thinking of it.
Yeah, that's the one. And because it was 3-0 at half-time, wasn't it? Well, yeah. Mahrez is turned quickly. I saw Chris Borden tweet the other day. Mahrez is just turning into like the new Aguero and David Nugent against us. I think he scored something like 9 goals in 8 games against us now.
Wow, that's a big start. I remember the first season we come up to the Premier League under Dyche, and the season we went down, Ben Mee was playing left back and Mahrez was playing on the wing for Leicester. And it was the year before Leicester won the league, and he was still relatively unknown at that point. And he absolutely ripped Ben Mee apart. We just couldn't cope with him. He's just one of those players who we just find really difficult. And I think just everything with City, obviously, we've not got a lot of confidence. Had a bit of a makeshift team. And yeah, I think just the way they play, they love getting the ball out wide. They love getting the fullbacks bombing forward. Obviously, then De Bruyne kind of gets that space, doesn't he, where he links in out wide to get those crosses in. And because we defend so narrow, I think it's just one team that we just really struggle to play against. We've kind of just got no answers for them. And Dyche has, tried to play 4-5-1, and maybe went to a bit of a 4-3-3 on Saturday. And whatever happens, it just doesn't seem to work.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm not sure if I heard it on it might have been maybe you that said it in a past podcast last week. It might have been Tom. City are a team that, because we defend so narrow, they're probably the best team in the league for actually stretching the player wide. And as soon as you get stretched wide against a team like that, obviously, with the quality they've got, the quick passing, they're going to start tearing through you. And when you've got Kevin De Bruyne sitting around the edge of the box, there's always going to be a ball into the box, which is going to create a good chance. And we just seem to get ripped apart by that, no matter how we set up, because fundamentally we defend as a narrow team. So we seem to really struggle against that. De Bruyne got a lovely assist at the weekend as well, didn't he? And was it Mahrez he played in, or I can't remember the goal.
I think it was the Mendy. It's a beautiful cross, though.
I mean, there's not much can do about that. It's not like we've made any individual errors. It's just the fact that we've been completely stretched, torn apart, and De Bruyne is sitting at the edge of the box ready to just whip in and put it on a plate for Mendy to score the third just before half-time. I don't know what Daesh does to even counteract this in the future.
I know.
Four games on the bounce now, hasn't it?
I think the only goal I can be critical of is the first goal with Tarkowski, because he has given the ball away and he's left a massive gap. But I think all the other goals are just top players who think about the game so much quicker than our lads do. And that's why they're worth 50, 60. You know, De Bruyne's the best player I've seen live in the Premier League. How much would somebody pay for him? It'd be astronomical amount of money. And that's just the class and the difference. And I've seen people on Twitter, and everyone's got a right to their opinion by saying, you know, yes, City are a great team, they've got great players, but would other teams come here and get rolled over as consistently as what we do? And I can take that on board. But yeah, it's just everything's just so fast the way they play. The tempo's really high. And it's almost like before you blink, it's like bam, bam, bang, and they're in and they've scored. And you kind of think, how've they done that? We were comfortable for 5 minutes. There were spells in the game where we were actually quite comfortable. We got on the ball and then you just give it away once and they just punish you. And, you know, that's the difference where, you know, you've got that Palace game, McNeil gives the ball away, or, you know, and obviously Bushwai misses. But against City, you get punished for your mistakes like that and giving the ball away. And yeah, it turned out to be a pretty torturous afternoon. And, you know, at least the one positive, at least Peacock Farrell didn't get an own goal on his debut.
and two own goals at that.
I forgot about that one. He just basically just like thought it was a bar of soap and he actually threw it into the net.
Well, that he was one of a couple who made the debuts at the weekend, him and Josh Benson. Now, I remember watching Benson. I think it was the pre-season of 2018.
Against Fleetwood.
Yeah. I thought he was brilliant in that game. You know, he looked like a cracking player. And I've sort of kept an eye on him since and thought, you know, it'd be nice if he can get into the side. And he's not even, I think he might have been on the bench recently because of our small squad, but it's not like he's come on for sub appearances or anything. So then when it came to 2 o'clock on Saturday and then it came through Josh Benson starting away at Man City, you know, what did you feel about that? I mean, it surprised me for sure.
Well, anyone's better than Dale Stevens, isn't it, George? So,
teamed you up perfectly there, haven't I? Natalie's gonna tell me off.
Yeah,
Dale Stevens brigade continues.
It could have put me in central midfield, and I'd have been more mobile than him. I'm only joking, Dale. If you listen to the podcast, love you really. Do you know what? I was excited. You know, it's kind of we come to City anyway. You know, we're probably going to get beat. It's kind of, what else do you do? And I thought, you know what, it's something different. And I thought, for me, that was the main positive. I thought, when he got on the ball, he looked assured. He looked calm. You can tell he's got a lot of quality to his game. And like you were saying, I remember watching him at Fleetwood in that friendly. And, you know, quite regularly, you go to friendlies and young players play. And I remember Ali Koki was playing in the same game and I wasn't, again, not writing him off. I just didn't think he stood out at all. But there was something about Benton, wasn't there, in that game, the way he got on the ball. And
yeah, he just got his foot on it and drove it forward. And to be honest, he did it a couple of times at the weekend as well. There was a couple of times when he was under pressure and he just, you know, turned a man and turned the player forward. And to have that sort of composure on your debut away at Man City, and especially in a drubbing like we got, I thought it was quite impressive. And it's good to see another young lad, as well as McNeil. Obviously, McNeil's the last one we saw come through. It's good to see another guy get a go, really.
Yeah, I thought, like you said, I thought he was excellent. He reminds me a little bit of Ward-Prowse. And I'm not just saying that because, obviously, you're seeing from the free kick he nearly scored. You know, that midfielder, not the tallest, quite diminutive, but got a lovely touch on the ball, wants to drive the play forward, works hard. I think, hopefully, he'll get more minutes this season, and I think he'll be a pretty key player for us moving forward. You know, we have got an aging squad. Obviously, players, you know, Cork's out of contract. You know, obviously in his position. You know, is it? You know, we have got to start blooding these youngsters, and I think that's the one thing at the moment that's given me a lot of positivity about the club. Is our youth system. Obviously, Dunn made his debut. You've got young Bobby Thomas, who to me I thought played excellent away at Millwall. So you have got the, I think there's like that, is it Thompson and Richardson who's coming through, are highly rated?
Yeah, Lewis Richardson, I think, striker, yeah. Yeah.
So, for fun. Yeah. Yeah, that's a positive for me, is that we've got these young lads coming through, and hopefully, you know, we keep saying maybe ALK do take over or in January, get a few signings, but yeah, hopefully he gets more minutes. And obviously, if he plays against Everton on Saturday, I really wouldn't be opposed to it. But I think Brownell's fit, isn't he? So I think I'll go back to Brownell and Westie and then probably Goodmanson out wide.
Yeah, we'll probably go back to a 4-4-2. But so obviously, we've just mentioned Josh Benson. The other debutant for the Premier League, at least, was Bailey Peacock-Farrell, who he came to the club with, you know, a lot of plaudits. He'd done well at Leeds, maybe come out the side a bit, but he's always played well for his country. Forgive me, I don't know if he's Republican. I think
he's Northern,
Northern Ireland. Played well, you've saved me there. He plays well for Northern Ireland. So he's come with, I almost did it again. He's come with a good reputation, and unfortunately, Saturday just didn't quite work out for him, did it?
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it? Listen, like you said, I was quite confident with him going in, you know, watching him for his country. Who does he play for, George?
I'm sure it's Northern Ireland, and I've never said anything differently.
No, definitely not. Yeah, so he's done well for Northern Ireland, and I watched a bit of a game he had against Holland, where like Northern Ireland got battered, and he made some unbelievable saves, and he did look nervous. And obviously, when you concede, you know, a couple of goals so early, your confidence is going to go down, and you know, we can't sugarcoat it. It was a difficult afternoon for him, and you know, where Benson did impress, he didn't, you know, you can't say he did impress really, but at the same time, he's a young lad, you know, it's such a hard game coming into. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be absolutely fine. Hopefully we'll still have a bit of pulp left in us for a couple of seasons at least. But if he keeps developing, obviously with the goalkeeping team, with Billy Mercer and under his obviously guidance, I think he'll be absolutely fine. But yeah, tough afternoon, but I felt for him a little bit because what a baptism of fire that was.
Yeah, to come in for a City game where we all knew we were going to get hammered. I mean, that's the reason why I was actually like glad to see Benson, because it was a case of we're going to lose anyway, so what does it matter? Just give him a go.
Yeah.
But poor Peacock-Farrell, I mean, you know, conceding five, admittedly, I don't think maybe even one of them was his fault. But obviously, there was the two own goals, which were cancelled for offside, which were pretty poor. Probably just showed, you know, a lack of confidence. But I was the same as you going into the game. I was actually excited to watch him play, but hopefully it's just a one-off. And, you know, City away, you don't get, you know, much more of a baptism of a fire than that, to be honest. And especially with the defence, that when we go to City, we just seem to crumble every time. And I want to ask you, like, why do you think it is, you know, we do put a good fight up against other top six teams, and it's not like every club goes to City and loses 5-0. It's just us every time.
Obviously, psychologically, they probably go there with, obviously, because a lot of our core team have obviously been together for so long, they kind of think, oh, here we go again, it's City. So it's kind of, you know, I don't know how much you played, you know, but when you've played sport yourself, if you know a team's got the wood on you, you know, when they have done for a few games, it is hard psychologically. You know, again, people might disagree with this, but I think you do forget footballers are human beings sometimes, and they're not robots. And so I think obviously the mental side of the game plays.
I was about to say the exact same because I'm guilty of this. You think of them like, you know, because the professional athletes get paid 50 grand a week, and you just think they're just robots. But then for me, it's been watching like the All or Nothing, you know, Amazon series.
Yeah, they've been great, haven't they?
And they make you realise it's like, and the Ben Foster YouTube channel recently, yeah, the site from GK, and it makes you realise that, oh, like, these are just like, literally just lads playing football, just like any Sunday league team. It's just a difference, they're just playing to a higher standard, but it's still the exact same thing, and they probably still feel the exact same way about going to City as we as fans do, and you overlook that so much sometimes, and the effect it can have, because I bet they do go to the Etihad and think, bloody hell, we'll probably be in for a rough day again today. And if they concede early like we did at the weekend, it's just deja vu all over again, isn't it, for them?
Yeah, it's just heads down straight away. You know, if it's 0-0 after half an hour and the game settles down a bit, I always say this, against the top teams, you just need to ride the first 20 minutes or so, and then you can get settled into the game then, and, you know, they kind of ease off a little bit. You know, going up, you know, and going more to the technical side, which we alluded to earlier, we love to defend the game now, don't we? And say to teams, yeah, get crosses in the box, and, you know, we'll header them away all day. But the way City play, they like getting the ball out wide. And the crosses they put in are, you know, are normally on the floor, aren't they? And in behind the defence. You know, it's not like they're just playing hopeful crosses in and hoping somebody's going to get behind it. So, you know, because we do play now with this stretch us so much. Our wingers switch off. You know, there was one goal where, you know, Lowton come in a little bit and Mendy should have been Rodriguez's man, and, you know, probably Jay being a striker just switched off for that split second. And obviously Mendy's got the goal. Same for the throw-in. You know, you just split, you know, switch off for that split second, and it's, you know, it's in the back of the net. So I think it's a combination of the psychological side of it, you know, kind of getting down, you know, conceding early, and just in actually the way City set up just perfectly complements the game when we play them. So maybe Dyche's got to look at the drawing board, and maybe if we play five at the back, I know we've not really done it before, and I think the last time we did it was when we got battered Everton. Against Everton, wasn't it? So he's probably been put off it, but, you know, why not, and kind of just really load the back four, or sorry, the, you know, the back five, and get your wingers defending deep and just try and maybe defend it that way. But I don't know. It's all well and good us on Twitter, innit, saying we need to do better, but what solutions do you come up with?
Yeah, I mean, we went to it was like a 4-2-3-1 at the weekend, because obviously we had J-Rod playing and Barnes with McNeil in behind Chris Wood. But I mean, for me, obviously it's hard to assess whether these things work in these one-off like 5-0 drubbings. And, you know, you saw around like the 60th minute mark, I think, when they scored the fourth. Who was it? I think we brought on Eric Peters, didn't we? And that was like a nail on the head for the 4-2-3-1. So it didn't seem to really work at the weekend at all, did it?
Yeah, but you know what? People criticise Dyche for saying it's kind of, he does the same thing all the time. So you then can't criticise him if he tries something new and it doesn't work. That's probably why he does stick to 4-4-2, because whenever we try and do something else, we're bloody useless at it. So he says, well, just do 4-4-2. At least we've got a bit of a chance in the game.
Exactly. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, so, and they trust that. One thing that annoyed me a little bit was, Tarki give the ball away. But then the amount of people on Twitter, obviously, he's done that interview, and he does want to go, fair enough, maybe down the line. But the amount of people that were saying, oh, Tarki's not trying, you know, get rid of him in January and all this. And you're like, Tarki's not trying, but he's just kept two clean sheets in his last two games. And he was, and on the last game against Palace, he was throwing his body about everywhere. But just because he's given the ball away, he doesn't want to. That's one thing I just hate, is when people correlate a bad performance with a lack of effort. Sometimes people are just better than you, you know.
And, well, like we were touching on the psychological side of it, when people, you know, when their heads drop and they slump shoulders, there's such a tendency to think, oh, you know, this McNeil is not trying. He's, look at him not running back and stuff. But it's literally just like the psychological element of being 4-0 down away at City. And you know, there's absolutely no chance we can get back into the game. There's not a chance. And yet you've still got half an hour of football to play.
Yeah. But, you know, we kept going. You know, you could say like we couldn't have ended up using 8 or 9-0. But I think it's just one of them. It's kind of get it out of the way. People overall, you're disappointed and whatever. But you go again for Everton this Saturday, which is... with obviously Fulham winning on Monday, which is a bit disappointing. You know, obviously
West Brom winning.
Yeah, which you probably would have preferred a Sheffield U win if anyone was to win. Obviously, a draw would have been the ideal result. It's got us back into the bottom three. But yeah, big game on. Early kickoff. It's either going to make or break the weekend.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting that the West Brom beating Sheffield United the weekend. And
Sheffield United battered them.
Did you watch it? Oh, no. I watched the highlights and I saw a lot of the misses. The misses were awful.
Oh, no wonder they've only scored 4 all season.
Yeah. I mean, this is the worst... I've read a stat, I'm pretty sure it was right. The worst start to a Premier League season a team's ever had.
I know, 1 point in 10. We thought we were bad with 5 in 9.
I know.
1 in 10?
Yeah.
And it, it just shows, doesn't it? Everyone goes, oh, you know, spend money, you'll be all right. Sheffield, you spent a lot of money in the summer, signed a lot of players, and on paper, good players. Yeah. I think Brewster costs like 20-odd million. And
yeah, and they bought Sander Berge, the midfielder, in January for, I think it's 32 million or something, you know, something silly like that. And obviously, something's just not going right with them this season. And I'm glad to see, because at the start of the season, I'd have had my money on Fulham and West Brom going down. And then if we were having a bad season, then I'd be struggling to find anyone else for that bottom three. But the way I'm looking at the table now, I know it's early doors, but we are almost 10 games in. You know, it is going to be Sheffield United in a bit of a scrap down there with the rest of us.
Yeah, well, you're looking at it. I think Fulham are on 7 points. So they're already 6 points behind them. You know, we're at least, I think we play United, but at least we've got a game in hand against Fulham. You know, when you kind of maybe, you know, we have had some tough games recently, but like Sheffield United, it is worrying. I know it's not a Sheffield United podcast, but yeah, they do look struggling. The one that worries me, I don't want to be doom and gloom, because I think I've been quite positive so far. I thought Fulham were good on Monday.
I heard the same. I watched it.
Yeah, because normally Fulham, you think they might go 2-0 up, but they might be a bit flaky. I know they conceded a goal late on, but they actually defended really well. So that worries me a little bit, but
this leads on to another point I was going to bring up. The fact that Fulham game, didn't watch it, West Brom game, I didn't watch it. How was for you? Because I've talked to, you know, a few other Burnley fans I know, and they agree with me. How was like the COVID and the not having fans in the ground affected you watching neutral games? Because I know for me, I've not watched Match of the Day all season. And it's rare now that I turn on the telly and think, oh, you know, I'll go and see what football's on, because it just doesn't. I've completely lost connection with it myself for games that aren't Burnley.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think going back to what I said earlier about the missus hating football because of me, I think that sums it up. I think I'm just an absolute football obsessive geek nut, whatever you call it. So, yeah, listen, for me, it's not the same. I don't enjoy it the same. VAR's actually put me off more than the fans not being there. Because the way I look at it, it's not like they don't want the fans to be there. It is what it is, and you make the best out of that circumstance. It's better than having no football at all. But the VAR one, that's the one that's doing my head in. I don't think we're going to talk about that too much tonight, because you could rant on about that for ages. But yeah, I'm all right. To be honest, George, I still quite enjoy watching football. I wish
I had your optimism, but a positive of me not watching a lot of games this season is that I've seen it flaring up on Twitter that, you know, the tide has turned now, you know, from my echo chamber at least, that the public opinion's gone against VAR. But luckily I've managed to avoid a lot of the controversy this season just by burying my head in the sand.
I think it's just getting daft now, isn't it? It's getting a game made by robots and lines and stuff like that. And it looks like you're in a maths lesson when you're watching that offside stuff come up.
Yeah.
You know, and then, just get on with the game. Just get on with the game. It's kind of, even when Wood scored that goal against Palace, and you know what Wood's like, you're celebrating and you're like, oh, bloody hell, it's Wood. It's going to be offside. And then
you celebrate.
It's kind of like, you won't.
Go on, you go.
Pardon? No, I was just saying, sometimes I only celebrate a goal once they've kicked off the opposition team. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't want to talk about that too much tonight. But yeah, do you know what? I have more interest watching the games that like Fulham and Leicester play in. Do you know that Fulham and Leicester game or the West Brom Sheffield U than kind of like when Spurs played Tottenham?
Yeah.
When Spurs played Chelsea. Do you know what I mean? Because it impacts us a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm the same. Because them games, you know, you're looking at it with half an eye trying to enjoy the game, but half an eye thinking, right, who do I want to win this? With an eye on the table. And especially, maybe not in the last couple of seasons for us, because we've done quite well. But with this season, you know, we're probably going to be going into a relegation battle again. It's ever more important to keep an eye on those sort of things. But I think moving on, we'll go to the... Obviously, we've talked the death out of City, and over the last, you know, two and a half years, we've talked the death over 5-0 losses away at City, and I'm fed up of it myself. I don't want to hear about that team until we play them again. So we'll move on to the FA Cup draw. And thankfully this time, there was a funny tweet from the admin. We didn't draw Manchester City in the early rounds of the FA Cup. And we did, in fact, draw MK Dons at home, if I'm right.
Yeah, correct. MK franchise at home, we've got. So, yeah, cold. I remember when years ago. I've been there twice, and it's bloody freezing both times down in Milton Keynes. But yeah, it's a decent good draw, isn't it? Home draw against a lower league team. Hopefully we progress. I think we got Peterborough at home, didn't we, last year? And then we got City away in the fourth round.
Yeah, you're right. We were all thinking, you know, oh, nice draw finally at home. We'll get through this round. And then the next round, we drew City away.
It is mad, that, isn't it? Then we got them in the League Cup this season. We're actually on a little bit of a run and doing well.
Yeah.
Hopefully, gets. I don't know who they've got. Hopefully City get knocked out when we don't draw them. Yeah, so no, it's a nice draw. It'd be good to have a cup run. But knowing our luck, we'd probably get to Wembley and we won't be able to go.
Yeah, this is the thing. I don't know if I could choose. I mean, you can't. You've got to accept it when it comes, because it comes around every so often. But it would be a shame if this was to be our year of having a cup run and reaching the latter stages and we couldn't actually go to the games. But I agree. A really nice draw, that. And hopefully one we can, you know, it's not like a lower league team that I'd particularly worry about. I know, like, if we got, you know, a championship, you know, a mid-table team, you'd be worried because they'd have a little say about it. But we should, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, not being too disrespectful to the franchise, but we should knock them out. It's reminding me of something I saw on Twitter today. I think it was Dave, you know, from No Name Ever. Dave had tweeted that on this day 12 years ago, actually, was Kevin McDonald scored 2 goals at home against Arsenal in the Carling Cup.
That what a night. Fifth
round. Were you on the turf that night?
Yeah, I was. I went to every single game in that cup run, home and I think we played a few home games, and yeah, went to every single game, which was unbelievable. That second, I know. Are we going off topic too much?
I did want to move us on to this League Cup, and I was just going to ask you memories of it, because obviously you're a bit. I don't want to expose your age, but you're a bit older than me, so you'll remember it better.
A little bit. Yeah, I'm all right. I said, I'm not old, but I'm 28 in March, so you know, I'm still pretty young. But yeah, I was in year 11 actually. But yeah, it was unbelievable. That's the only time I've actually cried at a football game, is when Pavlyuchenko scored that equaliser.
Yeah,
just absolutely burst out crying, and you know, I was proper upset on my way home. And remember just getting in the car journey on the way home, just didn't speak at all. But then contrasting to that, went to Chelsea away, which was at the time, it was an unbelievable novelty.
Yeah.
You know, going Chelsea away and
I was there,
only packed out. Oh, was you there, George?
Yeah, I was there as well.
I was in.
Only about, it must have been 7 or 8. Yeah. We took.
Brilliant.
I told the story on the podcast a few weeks ago. You know, I took the day off school, went down. It was just bonkers. You think. Now we sort of, you know, whether we try to or not, we've sort of gotten used to going away to those sort of grounds. But at the time, as you say, it was just such a novelty to go to Chelsea and to have Didier Drogba throwing coins at us. What a treat.
That's great. No, what a treat. Akinbaye scoring, another cult hero. But yeah, I've got a similar story. So a bit older. I was in year 11 and I was doing my mock exams at the time. And you know, my head of year, obviously knew I was a mad Burnley fan, and he said, "You're not going to this game because you'll be missing 2 days, and you've got you've got 2 mock exams, blah de blah." So my dad got in trouble with the school too. My dad rung up, "Richard's not well," but obviously, like, if you say that, the teacher can't really say anything. But
no,
then on the night of the game, I was there, right in the centre of the screen with my top off.
No,
so the. Yeah. So the telly seen me. So when I got back into school the next day, I got a month's detention from the head of year. You could tell he was a science teacher. No disrespect to any science teachers out there.
If it was the PE teacher, you'd be all right.
My PE teacher, shout out to Mr. Murphy. I don't think he listens, but yeah, he was absolutely buzzing. And I remember, I don't think it helped when he said, "Well, what have you got to say to yourself?" And I went, "Oh, Akinbaye is my hero."
Yeah, you're literally thinking, "Haha, aren't I funny?" I was the same actually on that night. I remember we obviously got the coach from Burnley early doors. And the TV crew were there from Sky Sports, and they filmed me and my dad getting on the coach, and all the way down to Chelsea. My dad was going, "Oh, blood! I think we've been caught there on camera. You'll have some explaining to do when you go back to school." But I again on the Tottenham game from that League Cup run, it was just unbelievable to go 3-0 up, and then the goals we scored, the Robbie Blake just putting it past Ben Anik, I think it was, and then Jay, and then obviously Jay to have that third goal. it being so scrappy as well. And I remember the day after, I know you said you cried that night. I was the same. I was in year, yeah. I think I was in year three at the time. And I went into school the next day, and my teacher was a woman called Mrs. Foster, and she was a Burnley fan too. And in the form in the morning, I was sat there with tears in my eyes. And she came over and she goes, "I know, George, it's all right. I feel the exact same. It's awful, isn't it? It's awful."
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that season was amazing. I kind of grew up with mediocrity with Burnley.
Yeah.
I remember us getting promoted in 2000, but not really. And then for years, really, we were just coasting in the Championship and the Cotterill days. Yeah. And, you know, I won't forgive Coyle, really. I think it's a bit like your missus sleeping with another fella. You kind of, time's a healer, but you don't always forgive him. I think that's like me. But at the same time, you know, unbelievable memories that season. And obviously having the disappointment of the Cup to then winning at Wembley, that was...
It made it sweeter.
Oh, unbelievable. What a day that was, though. You know, boiling hot weather. Yeah, you know, and I was there with, you know, with all my family who support Burnley. It was just amazing days. And you kind of look back, and I think that started, you know, the last 10 years or so now has been an unbelievable journey, hasn't it? So
yeah, and that Cup run, as amazing as it was, it did make going to Wembley for... I think it probably spurred the players on, and it made it sweeter for us when we got there in the playoff final. It just made that day like the stuff of dreams. It was just the accumulation of that entire season. And with there being, you know, 45,000 tickets for us.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Every Burnley fan you speak to who's worth his salt was at Wembley and in that same stadium that day. It's like a shared experience of the entire fan base. When you ask them, "Oh, where did you watch, you know, the Wembley game?" "Well, I was there." That's all they say.
Yeah. It was...
Because everyone was there.
I think like people like Claverts fans in Australia and stuff and living in Asia were come over for the game. I don't know, I'd be the same if ever I end up on my travels for whatever reason or not, and there was such a big game, I'd definitely get on the plane back for, you know, for such an occasion. But yeah, kind of, yeah, going back to the Cup, it'd be amazing to, you know, to get to the last rounds. And but you know, going this season, I think Dyche is obviously definitely going to prioritise the league, isn't he? So
yeah, I think Dyche will be prioritising the Premier League, especially, you know, with us having a tough start to the season. We're obviously going to be in a relegation battle, so it will be interesting to see how far we can go in the FA Cup. But I was just going to ask you, Richard, have you managed to listen to Dion Dublin's done a podcast with Dyche this week? I listened to it and it was brilliant.
No, I've not listened to it yet. I've been kind of listening to a different podcast, because obviously other podcasts are available other than the No Name Ever one. I've not listened to it, George, but I've heard it's good. Is it worth it? Obviously, anything to do with Dyche is worth listening to. But
yeah, it really is interesting. You know, just I think he's done a couple this summer. Hit with he did the one on the high performance podcast as well, and I think with Dion Dublin, he opens up quite a bit. Because I think he used to play with Dion back in the day. But it was interesting. A couple of times, you could tell the sort of determination and drive of Dyche's, even when he was back as a player, because a few times throughout the podcast, he'd say, you know, something managerial sounding. And Dion would say, "Oh, I never used to hear you speak like that, Sean, when we're in the change rooms." And Dyche would reply with, "Well, you know, I didn't say it, but it didn't mean I wasn't thinking it." You know, so you could just tell there, he's had his eye on this for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think one thing about him is every time he talks, he comes across really well, doesn't he? No matter what setting he's in, whether it's a more serious setting or, you know, maybe like a podcast where it's a little bit more laid back. And I think for me personally, he at times does get emotional, especially after we've lost and, you know, oh, it's the end of the world and everything like that. When I hear him speak, it's like it's soothing. Do you get what I mean? And it kind of like, it brings me back down to earth a little bit. And I think that's something that he's really, obviously, why he's so good at his job, is that he doesn't get too high when we win. He doesn't get too high, too down when we lose. And I think he's just a real calming influence. But at the same time, I think the players definitely know who's in charge.
Yeah, imagine us two as managers at Turf. I mean, I struggle enough keeping my emotions in check when I'm playing Football Manager. There's a new feature on the game this year where you can throw the water bottle in the change rooms. Let's just say I've been using that feature quite a lot.
Oh, I'd be terrible. I'd be subbing people off after 10 minutes. I'd want to make 8 substitutions. I think for me, if I was manager of Burnley, the 5 substitutions would definitely help, but I'd want to bring people back on who have subbed off.
Yeah, I was too quick getting back on.
Yeah. No, I've done it wrong. Oh, bloody hell. I've brought Stevens on in the chaos. Get off.
The big things must really have gone badly if you've done that.
Yeah.
I'd be, after the game, I'd be fuming in the press conferences. If we lose, there'd be no holding me back. There'd be no of this diplomacy that Daesh operates. I think it'd be full barrel, more like an Ian Holloway style attack of the players.
Yeah. I think I'd be more of Paolo Di Canio, just going absolutely nuts. And then if I was in charge, if we won a break at Blackburn, I'd do the full knee slide towards the Darwin end
I think that's what we the most emotion we got out of Dice, you know, it was like, you know, the Chelsea fist bump, and then at Rovers he came over and pointed at the crowd. He would, but yeah, I think if it was us two, I think we'd be sliding all our way down the Darwin end.
I would love to see him though. Do you know, say if it did go to the last game of the season and we stayed up with like a last minute winner, like, would he still have the same reaction where he just does that little like head tilt back and then he goes forward, like, doesn't he?
Ooh,
do you get what I mean? Or would he actually like give it some if he scored in the last minute?
And that would be a test, wouldn't it? That would be a serious test of how calm he can stay.
Yeah. It might just be like 8 years of pent-up frustration of Mike Garlett would all be let out in this moment. And he'd start doing like a Mourinho at the Nou Camp, running across to the director's box.
Cupping his ears.
I've liked your team.
Well, it's now, I know we've just, we'll let you in, listeners, to our behind the scenes bit here. We've had an absolute nightmare with the whole Wi-Fi dropping out and everything. And we've just been talking, and Rich has said it'll probably be time for his bed by the time we finish this podcast. So have you got a nightcap there with you ready?
No, I did have a beer. I actually cooked tea for tonight for once. So I did have a bit of a beer with my tea, but I did reveal something on our WhatsApp.
It was shocking. It was shocking. Listeners, I honestly need to just prepare you. You know, at the start of shows, warning, the next content is not suitable for young ears. Well, the next bit of content isn't suitable for Burnley fans because it's absolutely shameful. Go ahead, Rich. I've opened the floor for you.
I think this is the first time I've ever told anyone of Burnley fans. Yeah, I've never had a Benny and Hot. No, I've never tried it. It doesn't particularly, I don't particularly fancy it really that much, to be honest
with you. I've got to say,
I don't know why. Maybe I'm not from Burnley. I don't obviously, like, Tom's from Derby, isn't he? I think there's a lot of exiled clarets, isn't there, around different parts of the country. So it'll be interesting to see what the view is on.
We'll have to ship some to you.
Is it like whiskey?
To be honest, I can't really describe it. It's just like, it's so nice with just a boiling water, and obviously that's the Benny and Hot. When I was operating on the budget in first year, I'd have the Benny and Hot, and if we're having a night out, I'd do the shots of Benny. So it's a multifunctional drink.
Your flatmates down south must think you're a weirdo. Yeah,
they had no clue.
I mean that in a nice way, by the way. I mean that in a compliment.
They had no clue what I was pulling out the cupboard, but they got used to it in the days of I'm a Celeb last year, and I'd come into the lounge with my Benny and Hot ready to settle down for the night. And then when times got hard, it turned into a shot drink as well. So it's a multifunctional drink. And I think, you know, at the end of last season, we had, you know, a few beers sent to each member of the panel. Well, I think next year, we've got to tell producer Matt, Natalie, get this man some Benedictine.
I'd be quite happy with a few cans of Carling myself. I'm quite boring.
So it's now 8:30. You've not got a nightcap, so it's going to be a struggle. But, you know,
the missus is going to kick off when I get in.
Yeah, when we've spent an hour and a half, supposedly, on this podcast, which is, I think, now at about 50 minutes.
And we'll probably get 8 minutes worth.
We've got 8 minutes worth of appropriate content. But I just wanted to touch base with you. Obviously, it's the 2nd of December now. And this morning, the news came through. The vaccine, you know, the Pfizer vaccine has been approved. And it's going to get into rollout next week. You know, How do you see this affecting football in the near future? And just on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about this news?
Yeah, we got obviously, we're stepping on dangerous territory, aren't we, with the vaccine stuff. I don't want to upset people if they go on one fence. But, you know, I think it's a massive positive, isn't it? I think if it's having this vaccine, if it's what we need to get back to normal life, of our life, what it was before. And for, you know, for me and you, and obviously lots of Burnley fans, a big part of our life, or for me, probably the thing I look forward to the most was going to the game. So obviously we're still in tier three at the moment. It's frustrating that, you know, even if you can only have a couple of thousand, I think it would have been great, even if I wasn't selected in the ballot, just to see a couple of thousand fans at Turf Moor. So hopefully with a vaccine coming, obviously we've still got the numbers to go down, which is obviously how long's a piece of string, and I'm definitely not an expert in any of that stuff. But listen, maybe in the new year, it'd be unbelievable, kind of going to the turf again. It's I've never had this long not going, and I've definitely missed it. It's almost become a bit of a norm watching it on the telly, which is sad.
Yeah,
in it really. Do you get what I mean? It's not normal, but I've
been writing a little piece for the Claret's Trust newsletter that will be coming out before long. And
nice,
what I've been talking about is like how COVID's affected football, and I reflected on it in the fact that obviously a lot of fans are now sharing the same experience that I sort of experienced with going to university, and I know probably lots of Burnley fans have, in that you can't go to, suddenly you stop going to home games because I'm halfway down the country, and the away games completely dry up just because of money and, you know, wanted to experience first year of uni. So I had that from September of like not really going to games. And now I see that's the case for, you know, all fans when we're out of the ground. And it's not even, I thought Alex Campbell was really good on this when he came on the pod a few weeks ago. It's not just the football we're missing, and the physical act of watching football. It's just the routine. And, you know, I was writing about it.
Yeah.
Getting up at 3 a.m. to get on Aki Claret's coach down to Brighton for a 0-0 draw. I miss that more than I can really explain. And just meeting up with mates, going on away games, going to home games with my dad. It's and I know Natalie's struggled. Obviously, she's only seen her dad a few times. We've been away for football. Tom's down in Derby. It's just you miss that routine of going to games. And I think the sooner we can get fans back to turf, the better, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I think everybody's got their own individual routines, haven't they? So, you know, I go to the home games with my dad. We go to, I don't know if you know, we go to the Foundation Club in the Jimmy McElroy.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously, we even just a journey going from Wigan to Burnley, it's about 45 minutes. You have a chat about the game on the journey. You know, we always get to the Turf Moor about 12:30. We watch the first game in the Foundation Lounge, have a little bit of food, have a couple of pints, then we meet my aunties and cousins in there and stuff, and then obviously you go on the game and you just look forward to it, don't you? You know, obviously there's a lot of people, they work hard through the week and they look forward to, you know, Saturday morning waking up, going on the turf, or, you know, setting off early and going to an away game. Obviously getting up at, you know, 6 o'clock or whatever it is for work's difficult, but getting up at 6 o'clock to, you know, get a train or, you know, get a coach or drive down to London to watch us play away. You know, it's a different feeling, isn't it? It's that excitement that you get, and that's gone, and it'll feel, you know, if I am fortunate enough to go to Turf Moor, hopefully in the next coming months, it'll be a real surreal feeling, but I think it'll be quite emotional, to be honest, George. I think because I don't live in Burnley, you know, I've not, obviously with the restrictions, I've not been since, was it March, the last game? So it's a long time too, especially for people who don't live in the town.
Yeah, I agree. Like, obviously, we've been living down in Bath. I've not been, you know, back since. Well, I remember actually over the summer, obviously, back home, you know, with the whole COVID thing. And we'd been, obviously, no fans in grounds, whatever. And I did a route with my dad, you know, cycling. And I made sure that we went over Blackhall Way and we went past turf. Like, literally just to... And this was back... We'd only been gone a few months.
Yeah.
Just to see it. And like, just to think how long we've been gone now, and obviously it's positive to see fans getting back in stadiums, but it is bittersweet for us because we're seeing all these clubs, you know, down south getting the fans back in, and obviously it's seeming quite a way away for Burnley. So it is bittersweet seeing these fans getting back into grounds, and yet we can't go back to turf. But the day it happens, yeah, I completely agree. It will be walking through, you know, for myself, I walk through turnstile 32 to get to the James Hargreaves upper. Just the little things like that, that you just, it's not even part of your life anymore, just because of all our lives have been turned upside down. But I think something we must do is the next home game where we're all there, I think we've got to meet up in the non-ever group, you know, in groups of six, whatever the restrictions are at the time. Because I don't think I've ever actually met you, Richard. I'm pretty sure I haven't.
No, I don't think so. You know, going back to that in a minute, I feel quite, I don't want to sound like I'm kind of getting, getting all soppy on the chat, but it's been nice to be part of this non-ever team, you know, because, you know, you're still talking about fellow Burnley fans, you know, about the game, and it's a bit better than getting on Twitter and you build relationships with yourselves and obviously the other team members. Yeah, I don't think I've ever met you. I've met Tom at a few away games. I definitely spoke to Tom quite a bit at Watford away in last season. So, yeah, that'd be great. Even speaking to the idiots who sit near you, who talk absolute nonsense. There's a fella who sits in front of me who just talks absolute garbage all day. I can't wait to see him again and tell him to shut up.
There's a bloke behind us in the James Hargreaves upper, and he's renowned around our little block. He every few minutes he's up screaming at the ref, "You're useless, you're absolutely useless." And I remember one
my
game,
dad.
Is that Mr. Steele? But a couple of games, the stewards have had to come to actually tell him to be quiet. But I just missed that.
Oh, really? Is
it's that bad? Honestly, it's brutal.
I sit about two rows down from Phil Bird.
Oh, really?
So, like, yeah, literally just direct from him. And obviously, in that bit, you get a lot of obviously the ex-players doing commentary and stuff like that. And my dad loves looking who the pundit is today, especially for the other team. Say if we're playing Tottenham, he'll be like, I don't know, I'm just thinking of a random name. He'll be like, oh, it's Jonathan Woodgate, that. Jonathan Woodgate. And like, Jonathan Woodgate's on commentary, and my dad will shout, hiya, Johnny, how are you doing today, pal? I'm just like, oh my God. But to be fair, they always like wave back at him and stuff like that. And now, do you know that Rob Palmer, who does the Sky Sports News and is at the turf quite a lot, He's on first term names with my dad now.
That is brilliant.
Because after the game, my dad would be like, all right, Rob, great win. We're like, yeah, nice one, Phil. Enjoy it.
On first name basis, just from the hassling.
Yeah, just from the absolute stalking and being an absolute weirdo. But yeah, it's all that. And it's just, remember Natalie said on the pod we did last week, and, you know, for the listeners who don't know, you know, Natalie has an unbelievable busy job, and you know, my job's pretty hectic, but nothing compared to that. And it's just when you go to the turf, you know, for them few hours that you're there, even before the game or whatever, you just don't think about anything else. All that math, you know, that 90 minutes of that game is the most important thing, isn't it? Or that pass that's being made, or that missed header is the most important thing in the world. And even though you still feel it on telly, you don't live through it the same.
No, not at all.
Do you know what I mean?
And I think that's been compounded for us with the, you know, poor start to the season. I think the game we won the other week, that was the... Who did we beat at home? Was it... we won Palace, yeah. That was the first time I've celebrated a goal all season. Just because the one or two other games where I think we got an equaliser at the start of the season, I'd been working. So I think just being away from the ground and then compounded with our poor starts the season, it's just led to, like, you just distance a bit from it. Yeah, I can't wait to get back. Even just to see fans back in the ground. I know it probably won't, you know, the chances are we won't get in just on the ballot scheme. You never know. But just to see fans back, it'll be such a nice moment.
You know what? And we can go on to the tier system all we want, and, you know, we'll have our views. I know probably me and you, George, share quite similar views, don't we, on stuff to do with that. But I still think it's great that even like tonight fans are back in, and I'm quite torn in it, because I think, you know, say if Brighton, for example, can get fans in but we can't, will that give Fulham, you know, they're a relegation rival of ours, does that give an advantage? But at the same time, I still think it's better than not having it. If we were put in tier two and somebody else was put in tier three, and we wasn't allowed it, we'd be kicking off, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So, it's a really fine line. It's really difficult. We Obviously, Liam, you know, on our panel, he's a board member of the Clarets Trust. I was lucky enough to go attend a meeting with the Clarets Trust board last week, and there was a range of views on there, and you know, the majority of them was leaning towards, you know, I just don't think it's right that half of the teams are getting fans back in, relegation rivals, and because the sporting integrity, it's not a fair playing field, like it just isn't. But obviously, for supporters groups, you're towing a fine line, because for the last six months, so you know, since that happened, there's been this massive push to get fans back into stadiums. So to then now turn around and go, oh, you know, oh, not yet, wait till everyone can get them back in, it's a hard argument to make, but I do think there's merit in it, because it does give an unfair advantage to teams that have fans in. It's a difficult one.
Definitely. I think, listen, Turf Moor, it's all 22,000, doesn't it? Yeah. Something like that. You can safely get 2,000 people into Turf Moor where everybody's isolated. Again, I think people's got a right, haven't they? And obviously Burnley's done a survey. I think and other people are different, but me personally, I would go to the game if it meant me getting there early, sitting in my seat, having to sit in my seat at half time, and maybe not being able to buy a pie and a drink and stuff like that.
And just again,
I personally would be willing to take that sacrifice, and obviously other people don't, and that's fine. Everyone's got an opinion about that, but I definitely think that, you know, I just look at, you know, this, you know, schools, you know, we've got over 1,000 people in our school. And it's just like so crammed, but then 2,000 people can't go to Turf Moor, or even 1,000 people can't go to Turf Moor to watch a game of footy.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you can stagger it. You can stagger it the times people come in.
Yeah, and even if you had, look, if you had to wait around for, you know, an hour even, it's not an issue. I'm not bothered yet.
No, because you've waited that long. You know, Burnley could put the big, you know, put another, again, I'll have another issue. If anyone's listening, James Hargreaves up, and we pay the most money for season tickets, and you can't see the screen. That needs to get sorted.
But anyway, that's another issue, isn't it? It doesn't affect me as much. I'm on the front row of the upper.
Well, I'm like bending my neck. But anyway, I think we've chatted enough nonsense tonight.
Exactly. But I'll finish the pod, and you know, it's this beginning of December now, and you never know when we're next going to chat. So I was just going to ask you what your plans for Christmas are.
Plans for Christmas? Well, my good lady's Irish, so and she's not been home since the summer. We were supposed to get married in the summer and stuff like that. All got cancelled. So hopefully, all being well, we can get over to Ireland for Christmas and spend it with the in-laws.
Lovely. Yeah, a bit of normality.
Yeah. And yourself, George?
Yeah, we're hoping. Yeah. Obviously, this Saturday, if all goes well, my second test comes back negative. I'll be back home, and then just the same. You know, just the house, the three mixed households. Over Christmas, over Ray Greenway, over by Kirkham. That's where half our family is, who are from Burnley. So, yeah.
Lovely part of the country.
Lovely. So, hopefully, just a bit of a more normal Christmas day compared to the bonkers year we've had.
Yeah.
And I think, well, I was just going to make a mention of it this week. So obviously, I'm a Celebrity ends. So, I think we've got to all wish from none and ever good luck to Jordan North as it comes to the finale. I don't know if you've been keeping up with it. I think your missus has been making you watch it, from what I hear.
You know what? I said that at the time, and then recently I've kind of been, I've not told her that, but I've been enjoying it. Loving it's a stretch. No, but it's been good. I think it's been nice to see, you know, somebody represent the town and the club so positively. And I think it's, fingers crossed Jordan wins anyway. But yeah, he's a bit soft, isn't he? But you know,
I can't take the moral high ground, because I don't know if I'd fare much better. I'll just say that.
I know. I'd say that, but then you put me in it. I reckon I'd probably.
Yeah, and you're having to eat, you know, a cow's bits down there, and you'll be struggling. Maybe that's
I could have made a joke about that, but it's a family show.
Yeah, we're a family inclusive show here, so I think what we're gonna end on is saying, you know, good luck to Jordan North in there. I think it ends this Friday, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to us two ramble on for probably the better part of an hour, and we've been sat here for an hour and 46 trying to get our podcast to work. But you know, come hell or high water, we will get the podcast out to you. The only and ever you can rely on us.
Cheers, everyone. Thanks for listening, and let's hope for 3 points at the weekend.
Yeah, against Everton. Just a quick score prediction from you, Richard.
1-0.
Yeah, I'm going to score the same, 1-0 Burnley, and hopefully we can, you know, just move up the table a little bit and make our game in hand count. So it'd be nice to speak to you, Richard, anyway.
Cheers, George. Bye, mate.
Bye.
And that is all we have time for this week. Thanks to George and to Richard for painstakingly going through that analysis and having to relive another horror show at the Etihad, and basically just having a bit of a chat with everything else that's going on. Dave and I will be back on Friday with a preview show looking ahead to Everton this weekend. And the rest of the team will be back on Tuesday to analyse what will hopefully be more of a Palace-style result than a City-style result, and get the Clarets back to get some more points on the board. My thanks as ever go to producer Matt for putting this together, and to Banjoyce for providing the music. But our final thanks go to you, the listener, for downloading and listening to this episode. Your support is very much appreciated, and we would not be here without you. This has been the None and Ever podcast. Until next time.